What do you think about the child pageants, David Common?
Good morning.
Good morning. Obviously, I mean, you deal with kids all the time, and you deal with childhood and so forth. So, what's your take on them?
Oh, I don't know. There's a certain element of just almost like moral abuse of children. I think between the exploitation, you know, forcing them into competition, the idea that, you know, their beauty, their looks are what's prime, that this is all that's important about them, you know, that it's all so insubstantial, and yet, they're comparing themselves to other kids. I just think it's awful.
It'll be a no from you, so.
It'll be a no from me, yeah. But I was listening to Gillian Van Turnout going, yeah, actually, if you're going to go for legislation, somebody give me a call, please. I'd be happy to go and see if we can push for some kind of legislation to stop that. It's awful. Why?
Here's a text. I'm an Irish mum from the southeast. My daughter took part in the beauty pageant on Saturday in Castle Blaney. She entered formal wear. Her dress was below the knee. She wore no fake tan or fake hair. She did wear a lip gloss, and she won a crown and a goodie bag and a teddy bear. And I feel people have been misinformed, as the angle portrayed by the papers has stereotyped and sexualized the event. Nobody showed the beautiful, elegant dresses and the fun that took place. Under no circumstances would I allow my daughter to flaunt on stage or wear any revealing outfit when performing her talent, and believe in reciting a poem or song as a perfect talent, which were many contestants' choice of talent. And again, no reporters comment on the excellent performance from The Wizard of Oz or anything like that. We had an excellent day. Annette and the staff were very supportive with families and contestants, and really enjoyed the concert, the event. And in fact, I saw it on the news, the coverage, and the vox pop of the mums there was saying, yeah, that's great, we're delighted, the kids seemed to be happy, and, you know, there was a sense that the media has been hysterical.
Well, you know, maybe the media is hysterical, but ultimately it's got to be each parent's own choice. And so there you had, whatever it was, 20 families who decided, you know, there's no bad thing in this, there's no harm for our children. I think there is harm because, you know, if you look at it, like all of the research around the world says that competition for children under the age of 12 is bad for them, that they're just not psychologically ready to deal with competition. Yeah. So that's why things like the FAI, the GAA, they have Go Games, they have different kinds of ways of getting children out and active under the age of 12, and they only start really serious competition from the age of 12 on. And so even the competitive element of it, I think, is a problem. But it's that idea that you're being compared to another child. I mean, she got a crown, she got a teddy bear, she got, like, you know, you have some sweeties for looking so pretty. I just think it's wrong. It gives out the wrong message.
All right, we'll move on to other questions that are pouring into us this Monday morning to David Common. Some quite lengthy one there. I'll get to that in a second. In fact, they're all quite lengthy. But let's try this one. I have a question for David Common. Yeah, they have. My 8-year-old son came home from school the other day. Told me a boy in his class repeatedly pushed him against a rail of hangers while they were in the line. And I told him this wasn't very nice. And what did he do? And he told me he did nothing. He said if he pushed the boy back, the boy would yet tell the teacher and he would get in trouble. He said if he told the teacher, he would be teased for telling. It seems you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. What would David advise?
I would, I have strong views on this, and I do think if you're being pushed around like that, and if you've tried to make it stop by telling the teacher, that should be the first point to call. Tell the teacher, and he obviously feels that this other boy is going to tell the teacher, and he's not going to get into any kind of trouble socially for telling on him. So actually, telling and speaking out is not a problem. And that's also a little bit about the culture that the school has. I mean, if a school has a culture that we are a telling school, we don't like this kind of information to be kept secret, and people feeling under pressure, then that will help it. But if he's tried to tell the teacher and the teacher's nothing about it, I would push back. Absolutely. I'd say, you know, tell him to give a shove back. And as long as you're not the aggressor, as long as you're not the one who's starting it, I think it's fine to use a little bit of force in retaliating, because that gives the message, look, you cannot keep pushing me around. I'm gonna fight back.
So if a 10-year-old pushes another kid, you're saying the kid should push the 10-year-old back?
Why not? Because, you know, you're not saying to the 10-year-old, go out and push other kids around, but you're saying, look, if somebody's pushing you around and you don't like it and you've tried to make it stop by doing the responsible thing, telling an adult, and the adults haven't intervened, absolutely have a go yourself. If that doesn't work, well, then, you know, then I'm going to get involved, and then I'm going to make sure that the authorities at the school shift things around, because that's the kind of thing that will continue to develop. That child will continue to be pushed because the other 8-year-old feels that he's in a position of power now, and he feels that, you know, I can do what I like to you because you're not going to retaliate. and you know, whatever the reasons for not retaliating, whether it's fear of you know, reprisal, that it's only going to get worse. If I push him back, then he's going to push me harder, or he might hit me. You know, so be it. But ultimately, you know, your first point of call is talk to the teacher. I think that mum has got to say to the child, look, go talk to the teacher, or the mum now herself has to go and talk to the teacher on the child's behalf and say, look, this is happening. Here's the dilemma my son is in. He's afraid to tell you, because if he tells you, he's going to get called a telltale, and he doesn't want that socially. If he pushes back, he's afraid, you know, he's going to get into real trouble with you. But he's not the one starting this, and you've got to deal with the lad who is starting it.
Now, we'll take another one. This is, can you help me, David? My daughter, nearly 11, is suffering badly with OCD. We've been aware of it for a few years now, but it was mild enough and we always made light of it, straightening things to exact positions in her room, washing hands too much, etc. But in the last months, things have gone from bad to worse. It's so bad now that she has the whole house upset. There's too many rituals to mention here, and she's often refusing to do basic things. If it wasn't exact same as yesterday, for instance, we started out softly, softly, trying to reassure her, understanding her stress and upset. But at times, we are seriously losing patience with her. Night times are now a nightmare. She's the eldest of four, but is now monopolizing my time all night until midnight often. She seems very stressed at night, always wanted to sleep in my bed. If we stand against the ritual, she gets so mad and fires abuse and cheek at us. We just don't know how best to handle this. Would be grateful for your advice. She is a beautiful, gentle, sensitive child, has never given us a minute's trouble up to this. But now I feel like someone has stolen my child and sent me someone we don't recognise. Are we doing the right thing, standing against the rituals? I don't want to feed the OCD, but there's a huge price to pay if we don't go along with her. Help if you can, please. Nearly 11.
Yeah, to be honest, a situation like that, they absolutely have to go and get professional help. They're really not probably going to be able to deal with all that on their own, because OCD, when it becomes established in that way, you know, the undercurrent of it is anxiety. So their daughter is anxious about something that it may have been a particular incident, it may even have been a long time ago. But what she's done is she's used repetition in this case, or ritual, as her way then of trying to reduce the anxiety. And so anytime her anxiety gets raised now, she feels the need to do some kind of ritual. And what often happens for children is when they can't do the ritual, then it just increases their anxiety further, and so they feel even more compelled to do the ritual. And so it's this ever-decreasing circle for a child, and they absolutely need help to break out of
and
that
cycle.
And
who do you go to see for something like that?
A child psychologist, a child and adolescent psychiatrist, I mean, more probably a child psychologist, because it's, I mean, it may be the case that some kind of medication may help, in which case a child psychiatrist would have to be involved if there's any kind of query of medication in terms of the anxiety. But you really need, you know, proper kind of cognitive behavioural style therapy to work with that child, to let them know both strategies for managing the anxiety without doing the rituals, and also then building in kind of behavioural challenges to the various different rituals that she has, so that she can try and not do the ritual and still manage the anxiety and still realise that it's okay, as well as challenging probably some of the really core irrational beliefs that are at the heart of her fears as well.
All right. We'll take a call now from Claire. Good morning, Claire.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
How are you getting on there?
Good. Okay. I'm sorry, the line is a little bit bad, actually. I don't know if...
All right.
It's just coming through there, but it's a little bit bad on my end.
You might need to knock off a radio. That's probably the most useful thing. Do you have something on there?
Okay, I don't have a radio on, if I'm outside.
Okay. Let's see how we get on anyway, and you could be okay. What's your question for David?
My question for David is, my little fella, he actually recently... what I can only describe as a panic attack happened in school, and I suffer from panic attacks, so I don't know if I'm like self-diagnosing him, but he seems to be quite anxious going to school. He knows it's not school. We've had that discussion. He knows it's not school. He articulates himself quite well, probably better than I do. He says it's not school, it's the feeling I get in school.
Hi, Claire. How are you? It's David here.
How are you?
Claire, do you know when he's going to school, does he talk about like almost like a physical feeling that he gets, that an impending sense of the anxiety coming or the worry coming?
Yeah, it's kind of like he's just afraid. He's afraid that something's going to happen to him. He's afraid he's going to get sick. He actually feels sick. He actually looks like he's going to faint.
Okay. Because what's happening is that the anticipation of going into school and the fact that he might get frightened when he's in school is what's leading to a release of adrenaline for him, which of course has a whole physiological then component to it. So his heart rate goes up, he gets wobbly feeling in his tummy because the blood flow gets moved away from those kind of organs into his limbs. He might get tension in his chest or his neck or his arms, he'll feel flushed, and his breathing will probably increase, which of course are all the symptoms that people have when they're about to have a heart attack, which is why, you know, panic, it's such a physiological thing, and it's so distressing because people really do believe that something terribly bad physically is going to happen to them. And then of course the anticipation of feeling bad like that can lead to the anxiety, which can of course lead to the adrenaline. And so again, just like I was explaining about the OCD there, which is also anxiety based, it becomes this really self-defeating cycle where he's now worried about being worried, and he's worried about getting the stressful feeling in his body, and so that's probably leading to the stressful feeling in his body. Again, very like that other lady that texted in about the OCD, I do think with your son you probably will need to get some kind of professional help, because he needs to, again, to learn really good strategies for relaxing himself. I think it was about a year, maybe 2 years ago, I think it was coming up to exams, I recorded some podcasts for Ryan's show about a deep breathing exercise, which is really, really good for reducing those physiological symptoms of adrenaline. So if you leave your email details with the team outside, we can pass on that link to you as well, because what you can do is play that for him, and you can help him, teach him how to deep breathe. But you know, you may have some success with that on your own, but you might find that actually getting some professional help as well to just guide you through that process of learning how to manage that really strong physiological anxiety, and then you can begin to say, well, you know you might get worried, but you know you can deal with it. And that gives children just a little bit more confidence going into those situations, and so they don't necessarily bring about the panic themselves because they're so stressed and worried about bad panic coming.
I've actually just lately just kind of like putting little notes in his lunchbox, and I've given him a watch, and just little things. But I'm wondering, are those the right things to do, or am I just feeding into everything? Or
You're absolutely right to... Sorry, Claire, I'm talking across you, but you're absolutely right to give him a sense that, you know, it's okay for him to be worried. You absolutely acknowledge the fact that he gets stressed and worried, but what you really want to give him a sense of also is that he can cope with it, that he can deal with it. One of the difficulties when we talk about, you know, am I feeding into the problem, we sometimes worry, are we teaching children to be helpless, which is about saying, oh, this bad thing is going to happen to you, and, you know, I'm just going to mind you because, you know, the terrible thing will happen. And you don't want to give him the message that this is something awful that's going to just happen to him, but you want to give him a sense that, look, this could happen, but here are the strategies, here are the skills you have, you're going to do fine, I have great confidence in you. That's the message you need to give him more when he's going to school, and you may find that you have your own confidence to do that when you've got a bit of support and backup in terms of having, you know, both yourself and himself learned the skills that you can then remind him of going into school.
I don't know if it's linked, but he's recently started waking up in the night with... He's not actually awake. It's like he's asleep, but he looks like he's awake. Screaming, I want to die, I want to go, I want to leave.
Okay.
Now, the only thing I do is I was waking him up, but I realised then it just actually takes longer for the whole episode to pass.
To pass. Yeah, that's not necessarily a nightmare. That sounds more like a night terror, which actually isn't always related to anxiety, although in this case it might well be. But again, the best way to deal with a night terror is just to be there, reassure your child, make sure they don't come to harm, and just let it pass. So don't wake him up in the middle of it. Just let it pass. He probably doesn't even remember having them in the morning. And that tends to be a phase that children will come into and go out of, and they will pass through. They don't need a huge amount of intervention in terms of night terrors. You just need not to panic about it yourself. He'll be okay the other end of that.
But it was just quite worrying, because when he is having the panic attacks going to school, he's also saying that he wants to die.
Okay, so if it, you know, yeah, absolutely, that's really distressing for you. And so again, all the more reason, go get yourself some help. Go find, get a recommendation from your GP for a referral to a psychologist, and that should get yourself and your son on the way to some feeling better about things.
Okay, Claire, thanks a million for your call this morning. 1850-715-922 is the number if you want to ask David Colm a question. Gazillions of texts as well as calls in, and we'll get to some of those in a minute. Oh, now, hi, Lorraine.
Hi, Ryan. How are things?
How are you getting on today?
Not too bad at all. Thank you so much for taking my call.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for calling. And you've got a 3-year-old, is that
I
right?
I have, yeah. He's 3 this week. His name is Ryan. And okay. He's a brilliant boy. He's very active. Everything is fine. But it's just one thing. When he gets tired, when he sits on your knee or when he's going to bed, to actually go to sleep, he puts his hand in your mouth. Now, I know it was probably my fault, because when I breastfed him at the start, I used to, you know, suck his fingers and I'd play with his hands. And as he got older, it was kind of, you'd hold his hands or, you know, you'd play with his hands to get him asleep. But now he actually wants to put his hand physically into your mouth.
Yeah, that's pure habit, Lorraine, and it's purely about him and his kind of soothing, need for soothing and self-soothing. And what he actually does is he relies, of course, on somebody else to soothe him because it does go all the way back to when he was really comfortable feeding and, you know, feeling that kind of sucking on his fingers as well. So, you know, unfortunately for him, you know, it's not like a soother. So, you know, you have to break the habit because...
it's terrible now. Like, even going to his nan and granddad's or anything, like, you know, they're like, my God, he just sucked his fingers to try and get him asleep. He gets really irritated and he cries and he gets very, very upset.
And of course, the thing I'd be with 3-year-olds, you know, you wouldn't know where their fingers have been, actually, you know, sticky, messy. Yeah. It's just, you know, you really don't want to be there. Yeah. But what you're going to have to do, unfortunately, is it's going to be stressful for him when you break that pattern because he's going to find something else to, need to find something else to soothe himself. But actually, you know, developmentally, it's quite good for him to move on in that way as well. It's quite good for him to actually feel like he can manage that self-soothing bit because that's also key to him, you know, falling asleep down the line, that he can actually go into bed and just fall asleep without needing you to get him to sleep. But actually it might be about replacing it with something else tactile that he can hold on to with his fingers. And so you introduce it, you know, and bring it close to your mouth initially so that he can touch it as well. He might be a bit resistant to that, but actually that might be the way just to, you know, begin that transition to swap from, you know, a mouth to, I don't know what it might be, some piece of cloth or something nice. I mean, lots of children have little blankies or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Thank you
all
so
right.
much. Okay, that's
so good luck with that.
Thanks, Lorraine.
Okay, see you. Bye-bye.
Thanks a million. Yep. So your kids develop kind of peculiar habits, don't they? I mean, that's definitely one of the stranger ones.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's all about what worked for them when they were settling themselves to sleep originally. It's amazing how, you know, we need that sense of security and whether that's built up because we've had a dodie or a soother, because we've had a little blankie that we've clung to, a particular teddy, or in this case, you know, he's just had the experience of his fingers being in somebody else's mouth and that's what he likes. You know, other children, you know, they'll twirl hair because, again, that was close to them. You know, mother's long hair, perhaps, or father's long hair was available and they used to entwine their fingers in that hair and that's what they need. And they need somebody else's hair then to fall asleep.
I loved it. I got a great comment yesterday in the car from the Blades of Glory, and she said, I said, we'll see. And she said, oh, yeah. And I said, what? We'll see means no if an adult say it. You wise little owl. We'll see means no, and also maybe means no. And I said, what does ask your mother? She said, that's a no as well. Plenty of no's. Funny old names, let's have a look at you.
Come here, I'll give you a funny old name. Were you watching this series, Educating Yorkshire, at all? It's on Channel 4.
No.
Really good, about a school in Yorkshire. One of the teachers, her name is Miss Urine.
Oh, that's most unfortunate. Most unfortunate.
I'd say she's the piss taken out of him for that one.
That's all his life he gets that. Oh, sorry,
I was waiting. All the way in the car, I was listening to you and you're on thinking, I'm going to have to say that.
I can't wait to say that. My nephew's teacher was Miss Mary. And I remember a fella called Mary when I was younger. But she married a Mr. Christmas. Do you believe that? Come on. There's no one's called Mr. Christmas or Santa. The class thought this was wonderful. He was 6 at the time.
No. That's pure...
That's made up, isn't it? Urban myth. Yeah. Okay, we're not going to believe that one. My marriage name is Wardick. And then I had my first child. And I told my mum I was calling... She just spat his water out. Oh, you couldn't take it, could you? The water, you couldn't keep it in. My marriage name is Wardick. And then... When I had my first child, I told my mum I was calling him Ryan, to which she replied, would you not call him after your father? And his name is Richard, but everyone calls him Dick or Dickie. Could you imagine calling a child Dick Wardick? The answer is, it's a rhetorical question, because the child's name is now Ryan. Ryan Wardick.
Yep. No, you couldn't imagine. You just couldn't imagine is the answer to
that. So I was asking you with your professional hat on. My husband's surname is Horner, says a text. And when I was pregnant with my first child... And people would constantly ask me if I had a boy, would I call it Jack, as in little Jack Horner, har har, yawn yawn, P.S. I had a girl, happy birthday Abby, big 10 tomorrow, says D. So these are the names that I suppose people are kind of afflicted with from an early age.
Yeah, but your names are names, ultimately. You can't do a lot about them. Well, I suppose you can. You can change it by deed poll eventually if you're really unhappy.
Yeah, shoe.
Is it deed poll? Deed poll?
Statutory deed polls.
I don't know what you're...
Interpol. Shoebottom. Shoebottom is my mother's married name to my stepdad. When my mum asked me and my sister if we wanted to change our surname, we declined. Shoebottom.
Yeah.
I suppose it's there. Another question for you from Siobhan, just in between all that.
God, I thought you were going to let me go after all that.
No, it's fine. Take a sip of your drink there.
No, because you'll have it spin now.
Out of the cup. Siobhan, good morning.
Good morning, David. Don't go. I need you.
She needs you. You're needed. Fun.
It's okay. I'm not going anywhere.
He's kept his cape on. You're okay.
Oh.
But, how are you, Siobhan?
Very well, thanks. Great.
Okay, good. Great. Monday morning. You sound happy for a Monday. Well done.
Yeah, not too bad.
Okay,
yeah.
You have an eight-year-old.
Yeah, he's a super little kid called Christy.
Good.
And he's great in most ways. He's a bright kid, but I just have to ask him 10 times to do everything.
Oh.
And even though we arrive everywhere, you know, if we arrive at soccer or rugby, he forgets everything, even though I've asked him to get it. At school, the teacher notices he's, you know, forgotten the book or the homework or whatever, and he's just so disorganized. And I'm really trying to, and I've done a little chart to try and get him to look at that in the morning and follow it, if he could. But
yeah, no, that's
anyway,
a good
I'm
plan.
Failing.
Charts are good.
I'm failing.
Siobhan, I wonder, you know, one of the difficulties when we have children, you know, we say, oh, I have to ask them 10 times to do everything. You know, part of the difficulty often is that for the first 9 times, you know, we've been in the kitchen calling out, going, okay, Christy, come and do this.
Yes.
Christy, where are you? Christy! You know, and it's only on number 10 that we actually storm into the sitting room where he is and stand in front of him and go, Christy, I'm talking to you. You need to come and do. And then
we're all
him.
Upset.
You are, absolutely. You're furious by that stage, you know. So for the first 9 times, so don't waste your breath the first 9 times. So when you want him to do something, go to him the first time, stand in front of him. Make sure you're making good eye contact with him. Tell him what you want. And if he is, you know, kind of a bit distractible, a bit forgetful, then, you know, keep it short. So give him one instruction at a time and then make sure that he follows through and does it. And you might actually have to supervise him doing it. Then you can give him the praise, the reinforcement for having done whatever it was you asked him. He feels good about it. You don't get frustrated about it. And then it's over and done with. And actually, you'll save yourself time in the long run. So you know,
do it in small bites.
Bites, because it may be that you give him 2 or 3 instructions and he's actually forgotten. He's only remembered instruction number 3 because
true,
the first
actually,
two.
I say put on your uniform, do your teeth, and then come down and do this. I do that in kind of a list form.
So go back, you know, one at a time. I mean, it sounds like it's just his nature. You know, he's a bit distractible, a bit giddy, probably.
And he kind of knows I'll turn up with the shirt at rugby. You know.
You see, there you are. He knows that.
Now, spoon feeding.
Yeah, it's not me who's wearing the cape in this one now, Siobhan. Yeah. You're there, flying in, super mom to the rescue.
Oh, yeah. And tell me about your chart, Siobhan.
Oh, well, we just sort of, so Mondays he has to make sure everything's in a school bag. Tuesdays, swimming gear, get it together. Wednesdays, rugby practice, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And tracksuit days, so you have to put on your tracksuit on a certain day at school and all that sort
of
stuff.
And is that working for you?
Well, we just started it 2 days ago, and it's not so great. But
no. Do you know?
Day two, the chart's a failure.
Do you know what your difficulty is, Siobhan? You've got too many things, so it's not really a chart in that sense.
Yeah.
It's more like a diary or a schedule. So if you want to do a chart and you want to reinforce him, have the same thing every single day. So have it about getting his uniform ready and on him. You know, then you can reinforce him for that. So that's what he does 5 mornings a week because he has to get his uniform on.
Yeah.
When he's in that habit and routine, then you bring in the bit about, now, today's our Tuesday, so Tuesday is whatever.
Yeah.
And then you bring that in and you spend a few weeks getting that bedded in, and so you build it up a bit more slowly. I think you're trying to do too much all at the one time with the one chart. So just let the chart be about one activity, one behaviour that you then reinforce for him.
What's your surname, Siobhan?
Popplewell.
Popplewell.
I can't believe I rung in the morning that you were doing that other
item. That's a beautiful name. Hang on, you're talking to a coal man and a Tuberty. We're all in the same gang here. Big glass house with a bunch of stones between us. So don't worry.
I'm not used to it. I married it.
What were you originally?
I was Walsh, plain old Walsh.
Plain old commoner garden Walsh.
Yeah.
And then you became Popplewell, which sounds like something Enid Blyton might have created. Well done, Siobhan Popplewell.
Thank you.
And good luck with Johnny Charthead and with the 8-year-old. I hope that all works out for you.
Okay, thanks a million, guys.
See you later.
Bye
bye. So,
just this morning, my 9-year-old was saying to me, he goes, David Coleman, you see? And I was like, okay, I thought he'd just call me Dav the Coleman. I was like, what are you doing calling me the Coleman? You know, I hate that.
He was trying to give you just a different.
But he was just trying to be, all farting on me.
All farting and French. What do you want to take a little? Little piece of music. We've got Emily Sandy. We'll creep her in there. David Coleman, thank you. David Goodman.
A pleasure.
A pleasure.